Well, today we are hoping that we'll help your mind work around what's going on in emerging markets, because my guest is Andrew Foster. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Seafarer Capital Partners. He's lead manager of the Seafarer Overseas Growth and Income Fund. That's SFGIX, a five-star fund from Morningstar. He's also co-manager of the Seafarer Overseas Value Fund, SFVLX. I should point out, by the way, that SFGIX, the Seafarer Overseas Growth and Income Fund, is closed to new investors. It's what they call a soft close. But SFVLX open to everybody. And if you want to learn more about Andrew, the firm, the funds, go to seafarerfunds.com. Andrew Foster, welcome back to Money Life.
Great to be here, Chuck.
Always good to chat with you. And I like getting your perspective at a point where we are looking at a world that, well, in some ways, if you, you know, spend too much time involved in social media, you think it's a world that's gone pretty crazy. And on the other hand, if you look at markets and interest rates and, you know, strong dollar and everything else, we actually have kind of been sitting surprisingly still. I mean, we talk about how the market has moved or the bond market is changing, but everything's been going very slowly. So when you're looking out right now, what is your view of what's happening? And what's the big story? Because we're certainly seeing enough political shenanigans to make us nervous, but political shenanigans don't always affect the market.
Yeah, I think your point's well made. Political headlines grab a lot of attention and dominate folks' interest, but it's always difficult to understand how, for anyone, professional investors, for folks that invest in their spare time, to understand what will really affect the markets. And there are a lot of sometimes very bold policy pronouncements that don't even necessarily come into effect. And as they don't come into effect, nothing may happen. So markets may go sideways. And we've seen a lot of that, a lot of low volatility. And in emerging markets in particular, we haven't seen the pronounced move downward that I think a lot of pundits predicted based on the U.S. administration's new set of policies, partly because some of those policies haven't yet been enacted.
Do we wind up having a shakeout on the horizon as soon as those policies are enacted?
Well, it's hard to say. I for one, am a big believer in taking it cautiously and waiting, sort of show me state, Missouri style, waiting to see what actually happens versus what the noise and speculation is. From that perspective, I tend not to trade in the portfolios that I manage until I actually see practical policies being implemented, and then I react to those facts as opposed to trying to get ahead of the news. At least on political issues, I don't try and get ahead of the news because it's so unpredictable what might actually happen, and even when it does happen, what the after effects will be. I do think the emerging markets are going through an interesting phase right now because I think some of the underlying fundamental conditions, that is the real performance of the underlying companies, is starting to make a difference in the performance of these stock markets. And it's maybe less of them, even though the macro headlines are getting a lot of attention right now, I think it's the underlying performance of the companies that's making more of a difference at the end of the day in how the markets behave. And that's been mildly positive is the outgrowth of that.
You know, people hear strong dollar and they think, well, that's always good and great and we love a strong dollar. But it's not necessarily great if you are an emerging markets investor. So for you right now, how big of a challenge is it to size up the strength of the dollar and its impact?
Well, you know, it's been funny, Chuck, that the dollar's not been as strong as people imagine. Particularly folks thought the dollar would go on a real tear after the new administration's election. And it really hasn't. Really starting back in December of 2015, a few years ago, the Fed started raising interest rates, and a lot of pundits thought that that was a recipe for the dollar to just shoot ever higher against foreign currencies, including emerging market currencies in particular. And there have been a few emerging market currencies that have really fallen out of bed against the dollar. The peso is one example, the Mexican peso. But as a basket, if you kind of take a representative basket of those currencies and track them versus the dollar, they've actually been strengthening very slowly. But since December 2015, they're about 6% stronger through the end of March 2017. And that's really against the expectation that people thought interest rates would cause the dollar to shoot higher. So what's been important for emerging markets is that currencies haven't been the headwind that they've been over the last 5 years, say in the last year or so, year and a quarter, that the dollar's been more stable than most people might imagine.
For investors who are looking at emerging markets, we tend to lump them into one basket. They are called emerging markets, but they are different regions of the world and different economies, et cetera. For you, are we at a spot where you're finding that they are moving connected or they are growing increasingly disconnected? And so that when you examine emerging markets and try to decide where to invest, you are more picky and more choosy and perhaps even avoiding certain places, even as you like emerging markets.
Yeah, I think the point is well made. I don't think the basket of these countries ever made a whole lot of sense lumping them together, because these are vastly different and disparate economies and countries and political systems. And they're just their sheer scale. China's huge and Poland small. There's just very different economies that are under this label. So we do pay attention to their individual merits, and especially the underlying companies in these countries. We look at the real company's merits and put that chief most in our thinking and analysis. With respect to what we're doing right now, I think we I'd say sort of three things quickly. One is that we're very wary about China. Not all is wrong in China, but I think some of the conditions there in the economy are very stretched, particularly with what's called solvency, which is basically how much credit or debt the Chinese have in their economy versus the scale of their output, their economic output. And I think that's a very stretched condition that could be problematic for the country's growth and financial stability going forward. So not all is wrong with China. In fact, there's some signs that things are doing a little bit better at the immediate moment, but we're still very wary about that marketplace. And yet we're still investing there. We still find a few companies that are worth it. The second thing we've been watching with a great deal of attention is Turkey. I think we have been investing there for the outset of my firm, which goes back to 2012. We've been investing in that market, but unfortunately we don't usually make blanket macro top-down decisions to pull out of a country, but we've done so in the case of Turkey because of the political instability there. And lastly, though, despite these sort of country headlines I just gave you, we're still paying a lot of attention to the underlying corporate performance, and we're seeing, apart from those two places I just mentioned, we're actually seeing fairly benign conditions such that companies' profits are growing. If you were to sort of look at an overall average of corporate profit growth in the emerging markets, it's picking up a bit. It was actually about 8% last year, maybe 7%, somewhere in that range. And that's pretty healthy compared to the preceding 5 years. And we think that maybe that sort of rate of growth is possible again this year. But the big problem is that analysts that follow this stuff, they've gotten over-optimistic ever again. And they've seen 8% growth in 2016, and so they've almost doubled that figure going into 2017, and I don't think that's going to be possible. So I think there's a little bit of room for folks that are paying attention to be let down or disappointed by the fact that analysts are promising a lot and the companies may not be able to deliver that much.
We spend a lot of time on this show these days, not necessarily talking politics, because that's not where I want to go, but at least talking about the impact of politics or the potential impact of politics. There is a world leader who is known for father issues and a bad haircut who maybe affects you more than Donald Trump. That, of course, being the leader of North Korea.
Yes. Yeah.
Out of curiosity, for you, everybody else, when they're looking at domestic markets, even world markets, right now it's all Trump, Trump, Trump. But for you, I've got to imagine North Korea is the bigger issue, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Back when I started my job in 1998, people used to ask a lot about North Korea and also the chance that China might attack Taiwan. And in those days, I was actually kind of, I don't want to say dismissive of those concerns, but I really didn't think those issues were first and foremost in terms of the risks that might impact the emerging markets. I was pretty confident that China and Taiwan, while they'd be frenemies, they would, they might not get along, but it wouldn't boil over into outright military action. And I felt also confident that North Korea, while incredibly unstable and dangerous, wasn't necessarily going to be an immediate threat. I'm much, I think the China-Taiwan situation remains fraught, but is still not necessarily boiling over. North Korea, I think our current administration seems to be intent to resolve North Korea one way or another. I would say that, and that may lead to some sort of escalation of tensions, I would say the underlying politics of this are incredibly complicated, much more complicated than than I think can necessarily be gleaned by picking up a newspaper or following a headline on television. You know, there's so many different scenarios that might unfold here, some of which might be shocking to folks that are sort of casually following, and some of them might lead to a greater peace. I'm afraid most of them lead to a greater conflict. So it's very difficult right now to say how it will all break. We haven't withdrawn from investments in South Korea, but frankly, that's not really the point, in my view. If North Korea becomes an outright source of global conflict, it will be a global issue, and it's going to hit markets everywhere. It might hit South Korea and Japan more heavily than most markets, but I don't think any set of equities anywhere is really going to escape what would happen if the North Korea situation becomes exceedingly violent. So, you know, we're watching it very closely, but I'm afraid at this moment there's not much to do about it until we have some sense of how the facts will fall out.
Well, Andrew, I have more questions. Unfortunately, I don't have more time. The good news is you've always been happy to come back, so I hope you will agree to come back to us at some point in the not-too-distant future.
It'd be my pleasure, Chuck.
Andrew Foster, everybody. He is the Chief Investment Officer at Seafarer Capital Partners, lead manager for the Seafarer Overseas Growth and Income Fund, SFGIX, co-manager of the Seafarer Overseas Value Fund, SFVLX. For more information, check out seafarerfunds.com.